We're in Galatians chapter 4. Last time we were talking about the issues of good bondage versus bad bondage, because in our text Paul is dealing with being a slave and being in bondage and why would you want to be in bondage and all that kind of stuff, against the backdrop of the fact that biblically God is a servant, the kingdom is a kingdom of servants, and the disciples delighted in identifying themselves as the servants or slaves, bond slaves of God and of Christ. So obviously there's a kind of bondage that's not a problem, and then there's a kind that is. And in our study, we tried to make the argument that the bondage that's considered to be an evil thing was forced compliance out of fear to attitudes and actions that have built in seeds of self-defeat. In other words, you're in bondage when you're compelled by fear to do something that has the seeds in the thing you're doing to defeat your objective in the doing. Nobody sees the defeat. They wouldn't do it if they did. That's the deception. You shall not die. Eat. And so they eat and die. That's a part of the deception, but the fact is, bondage is doing things that are self-defeating, and the only reason a person does anything that's self-defeating is either by ignorance or fear. So, in the issue of bondage, it's almost invariably a fear issue. Because if you weren't afraid, you wouldn't have to be a slave. I mean, nobody can make you do anything that you don't want to do if you're willing to take the consequences. You cannot be forced to be a slave except by your fears. You may be a dead person, but you won't be a slave if you're not afraid. So that's the whole issue. And in terms of the bondage that the scriptures present as a negative, it always ends up in either little D or big D, death. And the issue of self-defeat, in that argument, the issue of defeat centers around the question of whether or not the joy of life will be realized as an ultimate outcome. If the thing that you do results in the joy of life down the road, then you're not in bondage. But if the thing you do is a forced, fear-driven compliance and you end up with death down here, yeah, you're a slave. You're in bondage. So the issue is really not the forcefulness of what drives the compliance. Fear-driven compliance is one thing, but love is as great a slave driver as fear ever was. I mean, it was not fear that put Christ on the cross. It was love. And the willingness to go to that degree of servitude for humanity is never presented in the scripture as a fear-driven compliance issue. It's always a love thing. So probably we could say that the love-driven bondage, love is a greater slave driver than fear is. The difference, of course, is in the attitude and the outcome. So it's not the forcefulness that drives things. You're driven by what you value. If what you value is a legitimate value, then love is driving you and you're driven, but you don't see it as a bad thing. But on the other hand, when fear drives you, you do sense that there's something not good here. And the issue in that forcefulness and stuff is not technically the presence of how you feel at the present time. Because the feelings of a slave at the present time are an untrustworthy barometer of what's happening. Feelings are notorious for two deficiencies. One of them is instability. They come and go, up and down. You can feel really good about a really bad thing, and you can really feel really bad about a really good thing. Feelings are, and they're unstable, and typically they're ignorant. Feelings are not rooted in understanding a lot of the time. They're just an immediate reaction to whatever's going on. And how you feel may not have any connection to what you think directly. At least not a connection that you can trace. But the bottom line issue in whether bondage is good or bad is the outcome, the enduring outcome. if the enduring outcome is joy, the bondage that you're subject to is not bad. But if the enduring outcome is death, then you've been a slave all that time until you come to death. So this evening what we're going to do is we're going to start verse 4. In verse 3, we're held in bondage under the basic principles that were established by the angelic authors of the law. And the elemental principles, the dictates that they established in this thing under the structure of the world as God set it up with angelic overlords. We were held in bondage under those, Paul says, particularly as Jews, because the Mosaic law was the fundamental bondage creator. That's what he says in verse 4 and 5, that God sent forth his Son to redeem those who were under the law so that they would, in verse 7, not be slaves anymore, but sons. So he sees the law as a slave driver in a bad sense. And he says that it was ordained or set up by angels. So being in bondage under the elemental things of the world is a phrase that I think he's talking about the basic issues that the angels set down in the law in their ignorance of the character of God and established an order in the cosmos along these lines. And all it did was for human beings is it generated bondage, fear-driven slavery. Because the essence of the law is do it or die. Or don't do that or die, depending on what they're trying to do, either motivate or restrict. Restrain. But what we're going to do this evening is start look at the solution. Verse 4, when the fullness of the time came, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman, born under the law. We're not going to get very far, but I did want us to begin to think about God's response to our predicament. Being slaves to that which will defeat us and subject us to death, being slaves to the processes that we engage in, thinking that they'll bring us good, and they don't, because the seeds of self-defeat are built in. That's the ultimate irony, and that's ultimate slavery. To be compelled by fear to do things that have in themselves the seeds of self-defeat. What did God decide to do about that situation? Well, that's what verse 4 and following is that this is the situation. We were in this condition. But when the fullness of the time came, God acted to do something. And I wanted to zero in on this thing of the fullness of the time. I find it fascinating. I don't know if you will or not, but it's like Michael said, it's the gift that keeps on giving. I'll just keep talking until... But anyway, I thought that we would start with this idea of why Paul would even address the issue of a thing called the fullness of the time. So when we think about the fullness of the time, we're thinking about something that we have to give some kind of parameters to, definition, if you want to call it that. So here are some things that have to fit into this idea of the fullness of the time. One of the issues is the issue of time itself, which is extremely difficult. If you go on to the web and type in what is time, just be ready. They have never figured that out. They don't know what time is. And we're so used to, you know, what time is it? You know, we talk about time like we really know what it is. And the reason we do is because we don't think about it very much. We just accept the way we've gotten used to the terminology. And so what I'm going to tell you this evening is just a part of what I got used to as a part of the terminology, and it may fit the way you got used to it and it may not. But one issue of the word time is the reality that time is a medium in which there is a progression of successive events. In other words, time itself is not the progression of successive events, but it's the medium in which that progression takes place. It's kind of like, you know, this is the pool and this is what's going on in the pool, and because it's a progression, it's a linear, they call it the arrow of time, it's a linear development, progression through multiple events, in this thing called time. We measure time in seconds and minutes and all that, even in nanoseconds. But basically, what we're measuring is a progression of events. Even the seconds are a progression of blocks of something called time. So it's a medium. And the idea of progression has at least two parts to it that we want to be aware of. One of them is the actual beginning of an event. Whenever you talk about a progression of events, you're talking about something that starts here and basically ends here, sort of basically. We'll talk about that in a minute. But there has to be an initiation, something that happens. And it says here in verse 4 that when the fullness of the time came, God did this. He sent His Son. That's an event. That's something He did. It's an initiating action that He took. And it actually also had an end. I mean, when He ascended into the heaven at the end of His earthly ministry, He was no longer in the world. So He was no longer under the law, and He was no longer in the position of becoming the Redeemer because He already had. He wasn't subject to death anymore because He'd already died. And when He ascended into heaven, God's sending of His Son was an event that had these parameters, a beginning and an end. And there is always involved in that beginning thing the second part of the progression, and that is something is set in motion. And what I mean by setting in motion in our big analogy this evening is going to be those rather phenomenal demonstrations on the web of people who spend days setting up rows and lines of dominoes, and then they set their camera up and they knock the first one over, and then they just amaze you with all of these dominoes that are going in all these directions doing all this stuff, because one domino hits the next one and that one hits the next one, and all they've done is taken a reality that this will cause this, will cause this, will cause this. And then they've just exploded into no telling how many dollars worth of dominoes and no telling how much time to set it all up so that they can run these lines off and accomplish all these little tricks. But the fact is, the first domino, when it falls, and we even use that as a figure of speech, the domino effect, when the first domino falls, a thing is set in motion. And what we call that in our thinking about the creation is the cause and effect reality, where this cause creates this effect, but this effect typically becomes a cause for the next effect. So that almost everything is both a cause and an effect. It is produced by something and it produces something. That would be effect and cause in terms of that order. But the reality is that when the first domino is knocked over, the rest of the stuff is inevitable. It really doesn't matter how much of the medium called time this thing is playing out in. It doesn't matter if they have 10 dominoes or 100 dominoes or 1,000 dominoes, or we could get ridiculous. But the point is, it really doesn't. If the dominoes are set up, when you knock the first one over, everything else is going to happen. It's inevitable. We would even might say that it's predestined. It's predetermined. This is going to happen because this happens to cause this, which happens to cause this, which happens to cause this. And you. So when Paul uses this, when the fullness of time, of the time came, he's using a term that sets us up for thinking about a medium called time in which certain things are going to happen because other things have preceded them. So that's the first thing I want us to think about, that time is a reality of a medium in which a progression of successive events takes place. Think about that in relation to what God did and when He did it. The second issue that I want us to think about in relation to time is the reality of a setting. Almost invariably, when you talk about something happening in time, when the fullness of the time comes for this action to take place, that presupposes or implies that somebody had made some plans prior to that that consisted of an intention of accomplishing a given goal by the implementation of certain rows of dominoes. I'm going to make this ball roll down this trough by knocking this domino off and letting it run over there and back around until it finally, when it falls and hits the ball goes down the trough. That was my objective. Now, it may be an intermediate objective. I may have that ball hit another domino, and off we go again. But the fact is, nobody sets up a row of dominoes to accomplish nothing, and nobody that has a goal for it doesn't sit down and plan about how I'm going to set these up so that that thing happens. So when Paul says, when the fullness of the time came, he's telling us that God had decided way before the bondage, that means way before the giving of the law, God had decided that there were going to be some things take place, and they would be done in such a way that he could bring us to this point in time where he would send his son to be the solution to the problem. And we're even told in verse 24 of chapter 3 that a part of God's thinking about this whole process was he set the law up as a row of dominoes in effect to bring us to Christ. He said, it's our tutor. We're going to go through these experiences of the impact the law has over us. We're going to go through all of these things so that when we get over here, we have come to Christ. That's the goal. That's what God intended. But the very fact that Paul talks about when the fullness of the time came, that means somebody made some plans with two things in mind, a goal and a means of implementing it. Something he wants to happen here, and a set of dominoes to make it happen. So we could kind of summarize this idea of a definition by saying that time has both the idea of a progression through multiple interconnected actions to an inevitable end. It's a progression through multiple interconnected actions to an inevitable end. It's a whole bunch of dominoes set up to make this happen. And that's the idea of progression to an end. But there's also the second idea, and that is allowing a pre-time period of planning. So both the end and its means are predetermined. They're set up. This is the way it's going to have to work. And in that sense, there are some other things involved in this phrase, the fullness of time. One of the key ones is that any given result, any particular domino that falls, regardless of whether its intended impact is another domino to fall, or whether it's a ball to roll down a trough, it really doesn't matter which domino you pick out of the group and which effect is the next thing. Every one of those has its fullness of time. In other words, the fullness of time simply means, okay, it's time for this domino to fall. Every domino has its own fullness of time. In the medium called time, it's this one's turn. In the medium of time, it's now this one's turn. In the medium of time, it's now this one's turn. And when you think about that, every given result, every domino that gets knocked over because something hits it, is at the end of a series of preliminary ones. Every one of them is a result caused by a bunch of other preliminary events that had to take place. So in a cause and effect temporal setting, a time-bound cause and effect setting, any given result will become a cause with a new future fullness of time thing in mind. The giving of the law came in the fullness of time, when it was time for the law to come. But the giving of the law had for its intention a whole host of things that people have to go through, difficult things, slave kind of things, bondage kind of fear things. They have to go through all this stuff in order to come to Christ. That was the goal, the end. So there was a fullness of time in which God gave the law. Now there's a fullness of time in which he's going to give a solution to the problem that the law created, the bondage that subjected men to slavery all their lifetime out of fear. So every result will then become another cause. And of course, the result, God sending his son, was to end in redemption. But that was not the end of the chain or the row. When he left, he said, I've got some other plans in mind, and one of these days I'm going to come back and initiate some of those things. And when I initiate some of those things, it'll be the fullness of the time for the second coming. But even the second coming is not the end of it. The biblical scenario is there's a whole bunch of other stuff that's going to be set into motion by his coming again. And that's going to run for a long, long time. A lot of medium. Lots of things happening. Until another fullness of time, a major one. I said every one of them it has its own fullness of time, but there are obviously some things that are more significant than others. So we can talk about big fullness of time issues like the coming of Christ into the world. But all results in reality set a host of domino lines in motion. So that the longer time is permitted to exist, the more complicated the issue of control becomes. I want you to think about that for a minute. How many rows of dominoes are running right now in terms of causes that have produced effects that have become causes to produce other effects? If you have a very simple, uncomplicated creation, a single action may only have a single effect. But in a complex creation, any given single action will probably have multiple effects that become multiple causes for multiple more effects, so that each one of them creates... Let me see if I can illustrate it this way. Let's suppose that somebody throws a hand grenade in this room, and there are nine of us in here. Did I count us right? And this grenade explodes. It doesn't just set an effect, or it doesn't create an effect that sets in motion a whole series of things for just one person. It sets it in for nine. And of the nine, there are others that are going to be directly affected that are not here because they're connected to us. So that everything that happens when that thing goes off is not just creating a single effect, it's creating a whole bunch of things. And each one of those becomes its own creator of a whole bunch more. In other words, every grenade that explodes, let's just say it this way, every grenade that explodes is going to create 1,000 effects. And every effect is another grenade. So how many grenades have to explode before you've got an uncountable number of effects? And when you stop and think about it this way, when did God send forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, in terms of his plans and his cause and effect creation? It was over 4,000 years, and no telling how many hundreds of thousands or millions of people had lived in this 4,000 year period. And ever since Adam and Eve, the whole thing's been blowing everywhere. So you get this 4,000 year period of enormous complexity in terms of causes and effects, things blowing up all over the place, everywhere, all over the world. It's kind of like trying to give an explanation for, let's go 10 light years out into the universe and find some rock that's floating through space and ask ourselves, why did this molecule in this rock bounce against that one? Well, that's the same kind of question that everybody asks when they ask this question. Why did God let, and they name it off, happen? It's kind of like asking, how many rows of dominoes would he had to stop to keep that from happening? And if he had kept that thing from happening, how many other things would have been kept from happening as a consequence of that? You see what I'm saying? One of the biggest mistakes that human beings ask or do is they hinge their relationship with God on whether or not they'll get an answer for why God let a particular thing happen. And Solomon quite frankly said in Ecclesiastes, there ain't no answer to that. You cannot tell what God is doing by observing the things that are done. That's one of the issues, that the longer time is permitted to exist, the more complicated the issue of control becomes. And if you're thinking about that carefully, you will recognize that there is a reality that develops almost immediately that pushes men beyond themselves so quickly in such a way that we now have a phrase that we refer to when we're pushed beyond it, and it's called the law of unintended consequences. Well, what does that mean? It means I knocked this domino off and I didn't know that this was going to happen because of that. I didn't know when I pushed this domino over in this direction that it was going to cause this thing over here to happen, because I didn't know that thing went around like this. And for Paul to declare that after 4,000 years of cause and effect reality in a creation where time is the medium, that God could accomplish anything specific is an amazing thing. How could he do that? How could he make sure that these things are going to work in such a way that finally this would happen and then it would be time to do something that would create a major result, redemption? How could he do that? Well, obviously, he could only do it if he's smarter than we are. We excuse ourselves for the decisions we make because we say, well, I didn't know that was going to happen. It was an accident. I'm sorry, I didn't realize. And we go all through all this whole thing about, well, no, you couldn't possibly realize. You're a human being. You haven't got a brain big enough to contain all the stuff that had to have been contained in order for you to know that day after tomorrow, because you said this or did this, this was going to happen. We don't have the omniscience necessary. And so for Paul to say that God had it in mind that 4,000 years of this stuff would be going on and then he would take an action, he would do something that would reverse the bondage. He would bring us out into freedom. But that brings up another issue in the flow of dominoes falling, lines of dominoes. Because at any given point in the flow of the medium of some line of dominoes that might be set in motion, somebody might have set another row into motion that comes along and it knocks a couple of dominoes out of play in this row. So when this row plays up to these two that are knocked down, everything beyond that that was intended is blocked. So how hard do you think it is for God to step into human cause-effect reality and say, I'm not going to let that plan, I'm not going to let it prosper. I'm going to stop that. So he just knocks a couple of things out of play, and then the whole line, all of the machinations of men that were trying to get this to happen, God says, it ain't going to happen. He knocks two things out of the row, and it runs up to here, and all of a sudden, men are frustrated. They're angry. What did we do wrong? It's an amazing declaration on Paul's part about the wisdom of God. Because the Bible teaches that God will let people make choices and take actions. And every time anybody takes an action, he's setting up a multiple line of dominoes to run. And the idea that God can counter that involves the fact that causes and effects can be frustrated so that the intended outcomes never occur. And that's a huge issue in the issue of bondage. Because the big issue in bondage is setting things in motion with goals that those motions cannot bring to pass. In other words, God has already said, you set this up to accomplish this, and it is not going to work. I am not going to allow that to be the end result. The two reasons, at least two reasons for that reality. One of them is the person setting up the dominoes doesn't have the wisdom to set it up effectively. I may decide I'm going to accomplish this by doing this and 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 this, and then I'll have that. But everything I do is setting up something that I didn't even realize was going to happen. And at some point in the process of chaos, if my action is a fear-driven bondage thing, life down here, the joy of life down here that I'm really looking for, plan on producing it by the things I'm doing, will never happen. It'll never happen. God has already underwritten the futility of fear-driven slavery. It's not going to produce the result. And then the other issue that's involved in this bondage thing without knowing how to bring things about is that there is somebody who does have the ability to understand from the beginning how this is going to play thousands of years later. He knows. He sees this as clear as a bell. And because he sees it, he has the willingness and the ability to block any one of those runs so that they cannot accomplish what the initiator intended. Lucifer thought that he was smart enough to be able to take over God's creation and handle it. That is the futility of finite understanding taking on omniscience. It's just plumb dumb. But he was so smart, so intelligent, that he thought he could compensate. And he still does. I mean, there's a sense in which the scriptures tell us that Satan knows he's a defeated enemy. But on the other hand, he never quits striving. Somehow, somewhere, he's hopeful that maybe he can figure out something that will actually be effective. And given that, I mean, given the most intelligent created angel and his failure, you can just imagine what human beings are doing. So, intended results have to be held in tension with whatever God has declared will be the intended result, because he can run the dominoes to their end, and he can block anybody that's trying to block him. That's the big thing about Daniel or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah and the fiery furnace thing, because Nebuchadnezzar asked the stupid question. What God is there who can deliver you out of my hand? Well, duh! Unless your God, any God, could. He thought more of himself than he had a right to think. I mean, egomaniacs always do. But when you ask that question, what God is there who can frustrate what I'm going to do? You have just almost signed your death warrant. Because God's going to show up one of these days. He did in that day. He frustrated the king's command in an amazing way. So you're really at risk when you say, I can make this happen. Many times you can if your goal is something that's going to happen in the next 5 minutes. But if you let time run very far, there are too many other intangibles, lines running, and you can't guarantee the outcome of anything you plan on doing. That's why it's so silly for us to want to be in control. So the big issue in bondage is that goals are pursued by methods that cannot bring them about. And then secondly, in freedom, this issue is of God countering moves so that the lines run according to his control. That's a big issue in freedom because that sets things in motion that God guarantees will bring about the intended outcome. God guarantees it. He says things like, I have come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. So, if I'm willing to appropriate the principles that are involved in that intention, I will get the life. Because that's His promise. And He keeps His promises. He'll block any line of dominoes that will frustrate my participation in His life if I'm operating according to promise and faith. And He will even initiate new lines, new runs, to bring life to me if, in fact, I'm willing to walk by faith in the promises. So it's a huge thing in this issue of Paul's bondage, freedom thing, because he actually says in verse 4 of Galatians 4 that the end outcome of law and bondage in a bad way is going to be ultimately frustrated because he steps into history with his own son's coming, and his son does some things in temporal history that make it possible to stop all of the lines of destruction for any given individual. Cut them loose. Bring them to redemption. Set them on a different plane. Give them a brand new start. God said to do that. He did do it. So the idea of God frustrating the flow or the run, it also involves the reality of an always present, always involved overseer who determines which and whether the lines of dominoes will be allowed to run and for how long. God is the ultimate authority. You set this in motion, and without any opposition of any kind, it'll run from here till the end of time. But it will have opposition because there'll be runs over here that are running this way and over there running that way. And, you know, it's not going to be a free run. There are going to be some problems. God is the only one who sits over this whole thing and says, okay, stop that one there. Knock those two dominoes off of that line. Set these up. Make them start running that way. And He's doing that in an innumerable number of ways for every one of His children. And there are countless children right now whose lives are being determined in a very real sense, and they're setting up lines of these running effects every time they choose to do something. And God's got it all under control. So that means we're really talking about some theological implications, some things about God that we need to be really settled on. One of them is that He is omnipotent, and He always uses this inexhaustible power because it's the thing that makes dominoes fall. It's a power thing that knocks the first one over, and it's the power of that one to fall that knocks the next. It's a power thing. But all of God's power, all of the stewardships of power that He's released throughout His whole creation, all of those are underwritten. And it doesn't matter whether they're seen as those that are initiatory or a fullness of time thing that comes at kind of at the end. All of those actions of power are subservient to the omniscience and the omni-wisdom of God. His knowledge includes all of that, and He has the wisdom to know, okay, we'll break this line here. We'll set up this new line here. We'll break that line there. We'll set up this line here. We're going to keep this thing running. 4,000 years into it, it's now time for the domino effect of the coming of the Son, born of a woman, to fall into place. And remember, He was born of Mary, who was the daughter of Adam. Through Abraham, through David, but not through Solomon. Solomon was a regnal line. She was blocked from that because in the period forget the king's name, but he was a bad guy. He was the son of Solomon down the line. And God said, because of this, this line is cursed from here on. Nobody from this line will ever sit on the throne of David. Well, that's the regnal line. I don't care. Nobody's going to sit on the throne of David from this point on. This guy has ticked me off.
okay, that means that there's not going to be a son of David sit on the throne from the regnal line. No, it doesn't mean that. It just means that in men's minds, because they don't have enough smarts to realize that Joseph will be the regnal descendant, and he'll marry a woman who is of the other line. She's a daughter of David, but her son will be in the regnal line because he's her husband. Not the son's father, but the husband of the mother. It's really a fascinating picture of how God is able to bring his words to pass. Because every action of power is subservient to his knowledge and wisdom. God did not send his son until more than 4,000 years went by. That means that a host of things, the chiefest of which is his solution to the problem of evil, is exceedingly complex. I mean, if God could have solved the problem of evil by sending his son within 20 years of the original sin, he would have. 4,000 years it took before everything could come into place so that it is now the fullness of the time. In other words, there were so many things that had to come together exactly right in order for God to solve the problem of evil, the bondage of humanity, in order to send a son. They all had to come together. It took 4,000 years for it to happen. That's a huge implication concerning the problem of evil. Because the longer you let time run, the more complex the outcome for anything will be. To be able to say today that 1,000 years from now this will happen takes an incredible amount of omniscient wisdom. And that God had a fullness of time event in mind, as well as a determination to see it come to pass, means that power, knowledge, and wisdom are all under the dominion of his pre-time love. When he said, love is going to guide this whole process, yeah, there are going to be some bad things in it. Yeah, evil's going to be allowed to come in here. There are all kinds of things that are going to take place. But the guiding issue is, my love is going to produce a solution that's workable for anybody who's willing to trust me. No matter when in the flow, no matter when in the medium, they come to understand me. If they're willing to trust me, the solution will be applied to them. So, when the fullness of the time came, God acted in history. This means that there are at least two things that Paul wanted the Galatians to understand. He wanted them to get a sense of the person with whom they were dealing. They had been, according to verse 8, slaves to things that were by nature not God's. Well, he wanted them to understand what it meant to be a slave to the true God. He wanted them to know who it was with whom they were dealing. The God whose omniscient wisdom and power means he can handle the runs of time and all of the cause and effect things for 4,000 years and make this happen. He wanted them to get a sense of the who with whom they were dealing. And he also wanted them to get a sense of their need for an orientation about him that involves grace. In respect to the God who's in control of the whole operation, there are many ways you can think about him, and Paul wanted the Galatians to think about him in terms of grace. Because in relation to God, he, not they, determine the reality and the meaning of all events. He's the one who sets things that are going to happen. He's the one who blocks things that are not going to happen. He's the one who says this will happen and that won't. That God, you will relate to based on how you perceive him. And if your perception of him is justice, you will flee in fear. You will, if you serve at all, you will serve in bondage to fear. But for the most part, you won't serve him. You'll try to stay as far away from him as you can. That's why Paul wanted the Galatians to not think in terms of justice being the final character. He wanted them to think of grace. God being willing, in effect, to create for each person who's willing to come to promise by faith, in a sense, a brand new beginning, a whole new, okay, now you can start over. We'll just set this domino up and let it start developing from here. Because that orientation means that men are going to relate to God with a grasp of what it means to be filled with His peace. I don't have to try to be in control. My life's not in my hands. I don't have to live under the burden of, well, if I do this, this might happen, that might happen. Yeah, it might. But you're not going to be the one who determines those mights. It's not up to you. It's not up to me. The issue for you and me is, God said this, do I believe it? And if I believe it, then the things that I believe will kick into gear in my decision making, and they'll set up rows of dominoes. But if it's an act of faith in the truth, God guarantees the run as well as the outcome.